Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Today we are celebrating the disappearance anniversary of His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It may seem strange to celebrate disappearance. We would be very happy if He would be still present with us in the world today, but the physical disappearance of a Vaishnava Acharya is also part of his Acharya Leela, teaching. Acharya teaches, and by departing, he also leaves, he shows how to leave this world in Krishna consciousness, and also gives the challenge to his disciples to recognize his presence in their lives, even though he is not physically present to them. Quite likely, in different ISKCON centers throughout the world on this day, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav will be referred to. I would hope in various Gauriya Math centers, but so far I haven't heard that they've taken any interest in this, which is maybe disappointing. I didn't write it as a sectarian book. I was just having a look at some of the pages of that during the last few days, and I'm astonished what profound work it is. As I've many times said, it's a most important compilation, which brings out to some extent, to the small extent that we can appreciate in our conditioned state, or even in the liberated state. We may not be very competent to appreciate the depth and the height of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Depth means profundity, and height means how deep are his thoughts and how high are his thoughts, how high is his consciousness. So I'm simply surprised that I could write this, but then I realize that I can praise this book because I understand that it's not exactly myself who wrote it, but Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has personally, well, I made that petition at the beginning of the writing that I requested him to manifest himself in that writing. So he is such a great personality. By serving a great personality, it doesn't mean that you become on the same status in one sense. Because Dikha Kale Bhakta Kare Atasham Arpan, Shekale Krishna Tare Kare Atasham. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that at the time of initiation, a devotee surrenders his very being, and at that time, Krishna accepts him to be as the same as himself, on the same level as himself. So, in one sense, the devotee, he comes to the spiritual platform, comes to the same level as Krishna, but that doesn't mean he's equal to Krishna. So the servant may go everywhere with the master, attending to his needs, it doesn't mean he's on the same level. So I had the opportunity to compile this book. But by praising it, I'm not attempting to toot my own horn, as the saying goes. But let us see him manifest in those pages. And it is very important work, which I recommend everyone to read after reading all of Srila Prabhupada's books. And we have to read Prabhupada's books many times. And then we can begin to appreciate it to some extent. Even from the beginning we can appreciate who is Krishna. We don't find Srila Prabhupada in his books directly. He doesn't talk about himself very much, but we can appreciate, you know, someone who appreciates, they see some beautiful work of art, they want to know who is the artist, who has dressed the deity so nicely. That beauty is manifest through some medium. This prasadam is so tasty. Who has cooked this? So prasadam is Krishna, fully transcendental, but has manifested through some personality. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is such a towering personality that we cannot but be awed by simply considering him. He's an awesome person. This word awesome in the speech of modern Americans, especially younger people, has become an overused word, but actually it's a fact. He inspires awe, he should do, by his very personality, everything about him. So he disappeared from this world 78 years ago. Actually, it was January 78, that'll be 2015. January the 1st, 2015 is the anniversary according to the solar calendar. So that's not 7, that's 79 then, isn't it? Yeah. And as is usual when a great personality passes away from this world, either spiritual or material, of course. Material, no one's really great. Who are the great people of the world? The 20th century, voted man of the century by Time magazine, Einstein. They're fools, they don't know who's actually great. So he's great, but all of you are more intelligent than Einstein, because you're chanting Hare Krishna. Even the most neophyte devotee is more important than Einstein. Other great personalities of 20th century, Stalin, Hitler, Mao Zedong, Queen Elizabeth II, still going on well into the 21st century. But they're all insignificant in comparison to the Vaishnava. When any great personality passes away, leader of people, someone who has inspired many people, there are different kinds of great people. Einstein, his passing away didn't very much affect the world of science, because he was an ideologist, he wasn't a leader of people. But great people in the sense of being leader of people, when they pass away, that marks a great change in the situation. There's a leadership vacuum. And how that is filled greatly affects the organization or the society which he was leading. We saw that after the passing of Srila Prabhupada also, that ISKCON before the physical disappearance of Srila Prabhupada and after, it's different. And it's not just that it's time has passed, but the and things change in course of time, but the difference of Srila Prabhupada being personally present in ISKCON and not is a marked difference. And similarly, even a leader in Russia, the USSR, Brezhnev was the leader for many, many years. And even though he seemed to be not that effectual, his passing marked a watershed in the history of the USSR. Actually, it was the end of the USSR. It was just a matter of time. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's passing, that certainly... Now we're talking about extrinsic matters, but they're also important for our understanding. How there was no one capable of single-handedly and in all respects taking the leadership in the manner that he had done. He was the leader of the Gauriya Math. He wasn't an organizer. He left that in the hands of others. Principally, Kunja Bihari Vidya Bhushan. Principally, he was definitely the number one organizer. And there were others also. But, of course, major decisions would have to be, they'd have to go through him. They'd have to be ratified by him. But spiritually, he was undoubtedly the dynamo of the Gauriya Math. Even though among his disciples, where I say spiritually, that means in spiritual practice and in spiritual teaching. And among his disciples, there were several who were also spiritually, intellectually, philosophically, towering figures, very great personalities, among whom at the time Ananta Vasudeva Vidya, Paravidya Bhushan. He was seen to be on the highest level, practically on the same level of Saraswati Thakur, he was considered. Others were there also, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, and then the Siddha Swarup, who later became Siddhanti Maharaj. Later on, he was seen to more extent. And there are others also, actually many of them, even Kunja Bihari Vidya Bhushan, he's not considered to be a great philosopher or anything, but we see that he was an administrator, considered like that. But then if we see his lectures, he wasn't slack in the matter. He was also, Bon Maharaj, of course, also was expert in presenting, especially orally, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Also, Vinod Bihari, who later became Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj, he was considered. He's an administrator, what does he know? But actually it was seen later, more so. He was philosophically very astute also. But in the passing away, it was considered to who will fill that role, and that role was given to Ananta Vasudeva Paravidya Bhushan. It was considered that he will continue in the same way. He will be for the Gauriya Math what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was. And actually, Saraswati Thakur shortly before his passing, he had allotted different services to his disciples to particularly perform after it was understood, after his passing away. And Rupa Raghunath, he will teach, Vasudev Prabhu, he will speak the teachings of Rupa and Raghunath. So that was presumed that, well, he will take the role of the Acharya, because that's the principal role of the Acharya, is to speak the teachings of Rupa Raghunathavani. He will give that, because that's the principal thing the Acharya does. Others they may perform administrative services, others they may be expert in kirtan or puja, but specifically the role of the Acharya is to explicate the teachings of the Sampradaya. And Saraswati Thakur had said that Vasudev should do that. And he gave different roles to others. To Sundarananda Vidyavinod, he should complete the long-standing work of the Vaishnava Manjusha, the Manjusha means a casket. So that's supposed to be an encyclopedic dictionary of Gauriya Vaishnavism. So that work had been taken up by Saraswati Thakur and it was left pending over many years, and that was given to Sundarananda Vidyavinod to finish, and later it was finished in a somewhat different way by this Haridas Das, who made the Gauriya Vaishnav Abhidhan. Abhidhan means dictionary. He wasn't directly a follower of Saraswati Thakur, or even indirectly. Then to Kunja Bihari, he said as long as he lives, he should continue to manage the institution. To Bharati Maharaj, he said, in yoga or viyoga, in love or in rupture, one should, what is that? One should continue to, I can't remember it, to serve the mission, because Bharati Maharaj had been estranged from the mission and from his guru, because he was making many devotees, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wasn't very happy with him, at least externally, we should say. Because he thought, well, you're just keeping me as an agent. You're actually your followers, but you're just keeping me as an agent. This kind of thing, he said. So, Ananta Vasudeva was supposed to take that role. Saraswati Thakur said to make a governing body. Some effort was made in that regard, but the leadership was given to one person, and later it was seen that Ananta Vasudev Prabhu, who shortly thereafter took sannyas, Bhakti Prasad Puri Goswami, with that name, it was seen that he, well, for whatever reason, he didn't fulfill the role. His supporters will say that he, because everyone was fighting, he left that role. But for whatever reason, he didn't follow it through. Generally, it's stated that there was some fall down on his part. But he didn't fulfill. The others didn't want to accept him. And of course, because he's a different person also. Not everyone's the same. So he started to give a different direction to the Gauriya Math. Somewhat, well, emphasizing very much on study, literature. Not that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was lacking in this department at all, but he would, Ananta Vasudeva, his life's desire was to, which he eventually did later on, in many of the books of the Goswamis, to, which were just in manuscript form, to gather them and to make critical editions that, this later on, Puri Goswami did, Puridas, he later became known as Puridas, but other members of the mission weren't very pleased with that because they were going out and preaching and collecting, and all the money was being used for paying a group of pundits to sit and go through all the manuscripts and compare them. And the mission was getting blocked up, constipated, because all the intellectually capable devotees were engaged, not all, but many were engaged in this way. And the funds of the mission were engaged in this, which was actually an important service, but there were immediate needs also. So that was one cause of tension. And there may be so many other causes of tension. So it was a watershed. The Gauriya Math, up to that date and after that date, it was never to be the same. ISKCON didn't change so drastically. But definitely it's changed. It didn't change so drastically because Srila Prabhupada warned, don't follow the example of the Gauriya Math. Make a GBC and follow the GBC. Anyway, I don't want to get into the history of ISKCON now, but anyway, it's different. Different and not all around in the best of ways. So Thakur passed away from this world just 79 years ago, which isn't very long, actually. But the world has changed a lot since that time. The world has changed means, anyway, birth, death, old age, and disease is going on as previously. But socially, culturally, the world has changed dramatically since that time. Even in my lifetime, it's changed a lot. Just the introduction of the internet and the these iPhones and all that, it's changed the world a lot. Everyone will, as a child, we used to hear that in future everyone will have a computer in their home, and it seemed like a dream. Because in those days a computer would fill up a practically one's whole home, and ticker tape came out of it. But now no one dreamed of laptops at that time. But any simple laptop is far more advanced than the best computers that they had in those days. Which raises the question. In 1968, I believe it was, man went to the moon, right? Was it 68 they first went? 68, 69, something like that. But that little laptop you have there is far more advanced than any computers they had in those days. So it was all computer guided. How did they send that firework off to the moon? Because there's space rockets, they're just fireworks. They're big fireworks. You put it, that's what it is. It works on the same principle. There's a big, the rocket you have in the fireworks, it has a big flame underneath it and it goes up. And it's the same as these space rockets which go up from Cape Kennedy, formerly known as Cape Canaveral, until someone shot John F. Kennedy dead. So, anyway, that's another discussion altogether. Yeah, in those days there were the space travel, no one was even thinking of it. Maybe H.G. Wells, and he had some, he wrote some stories of looking to the future, but it wasn't dreamed of that man could go into space. It was just not imaginable. So the world has changed very much in a short time. Spiritually, the world has changed also. It seemed that the prospects of Krishna consciousness spreading all over the world, it didn't seem very possible. That at the time when Saraswati Thakur passed away, there was still one disciple in England. The others had come back. Goswami Maharaj remained there. I believe he remained there for some time, even after the passing of Saraswati Thakur. As far as I have to check that now. But it seemed not possible. They tried their best. And anyway, the winds of war were beginning to blow, just like they are at the present time. Now, it's there in the Western press that we're getting ready for war with Russia. They're talking of it. There's no particular reason for a war with Russia, because what's the reason? But anyway, they want it and they're going to do it. And they're just letting everyone know, we're just getting ready for it. It may brew for a few more years, just like in the 1930s in Europe. Everyone knew war was coming, but it just took a little time. I guess they had to brainwash the people that they have to go and get themselves killed. That's one thing. It takes a little time. And another thing is that, you need lots of weapons. And, well, I guess they got plenty of those, but they have to get... Anyway, whatever. It took a little time for it all to brew up. Sangsara dava nala. For the forest fire, the bamboos are blowing, and there's going to be a conflagration, which means a massive fire. So, it wasn't an opportune time for continuing the preaching in the West. And after the Second World War, practically after it was all over, it became forgotten in the Gaudiya Math. They forgot that they were supposed to do that. So it was unimaginable that Krishna consciousness could be spread, that there would be Rath Yatras in all over the world. We used to say, yes, on the Rath Yatras day, we used to say, yes, and this festival is also going on in Los Angeles, London, Sydney, Tokyo, but now it goes on in so many places you never even heard of. Small cities. Is there a Rath Yatra in Perm? They do? Perm, Ekaterinburg, and small town. Well, they're not so small. Perm's what? 500,000 population? 1 million. 1 million, so not so small. But even in small towns, like, I can't even think of the names of them now, some small towns in Russia. And in Delhi, there's in the greater capital, what's it called? Greater capital area? What's it called? Delhi area? Something like that. There's practically one every month in all different parts of Delhi city, plus Noida, Faridabad, and so on. So it was unimaginable. But now it's come to pass. And the seed of all of this, well, the seed is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prithivite ache jata nagaradigram savarcha prachahoi be moranam. And in the, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that in every town and village my name will be propagated. Every town and village of the world. And with the beginning of globalization of the world, we have this term now, globalization, and we have McDonald's in every town and village. Well, they're trying their best. Good news, McDonald's profits are going down and down and down in America. Great. As George Harrison said, we should make our Govinda's restaurants and put McDonald's out of business. It's a good thing he said. But globalization began, we understand from Shastra that actually the whole world was already globalized at one time, globalized Vedic culture. But that whole process began with, if we take a Eurocentric worldview, which the intellectual ethos of the world is Eurocentric or white man centric. Then Marco Polo and others, they went off to China, and after that there were explorers going off and discovering Africa and all these places, and then trade between Europe and India, and then eventually India came under the royal crown. So globalization was going on. And the fact that people were coming back and forward between Europe and India, and to a lesser extent America and India, or America and Asia, and it was a common thing. And some Asians also went to England. So some Vaishnavas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, saw in this an opportunity to spread Krishna consciousness to the West. They thought, well, the British are coming here and they're doing their business and they have their Bibles and all this kind of thing. Well, we can go there, we can speak to them and we can give them what we have also. Not everyone was dazzled by the European assertion that Indians are inferior, which was very, very strongly promoted. It was just considered a fact. The Westerners just considered that Indians are an inferior people. You see, we conquered them, that means they're inferior. And they'd say things. I read just recently that, what can you expect of them? You see, it's a hot climate and they eat all this spicy food and they're very lascivious, was the word I read one judge used, which means very lusty, and that's why they have many children. And Winston Churchill, when he was told that so many people are dying in a famine, and he said, well, anyway, they deserve to die because they have a nasty religion and they breed like rabbits, so no harm if they all die. That was the outlook. They thought Indians are an inferior people, but not everyone believed that. So some Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they saw in globalization the opportunity to take Krishna consciousness to the Western world. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was one of them, wasn't the only one. and he was hopeful because the Western man taught the policy of educating Indians in Western literature and Western thought and Western science. It was presumed that if the Indians were trained in this, that they could come to become civilized. Because civilization means what's going on in the West. As one prominent person, I can't remember who it was, maybe it's Lord Macaulay, he said that one shelf of any European library is worth more than all the Shastra, as they called it, means Shastra, put together. So they felt like that we have to civilize the Indians. We have to teach them all the good qualities of virtue that we have imbibed. Yeah, they have their virtue, like killing cows and killing humans that don't agree. All these people, they speak of liberal values, but if people don't agree with them, they'll either shoot them or character assassinate them or whatever. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was raised among the Bhadralok of Calcutta. Bhadralok means the gentle people. I suppose taken from the term gentleman. It's a Bengali calque of the English term gentleman becomes Bhadralok. So they were the Western, or means English educated, middle class, who are supposed to take up roles in the administrative service under the British. Because the British only had very few, very small percentage, or less than 1% of the Indian population. So they had to rule through the Indians. So they needed to train some of them up. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was hopeful that, well, these people, they believe in reason. They thought that these Hindus, they're just stupid. They're just sentimental and they believe in the Shastra. And there's no reason or logic. Of course, there is highly sophisticated schools of logic in India, which were not so strong at the time, I suppose. And they consider the Hinduism just all superstition, and they were convinced that Christianity there's no doubt about it, it's the real religion. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was confident that, well, if we present the teachings of Sriman Mahaprabhu, as he usually refers to Lord Chaitanya, in an ordered manner that the Western man will also appreciate. And therefore he wrote books, especially Chaitanya Shikshamrita. It's a very systematic approach about what are the levels of human beings, the savage, the semi-civilized, the ethical, and above that is the religious. Then what are the various levels of religion? He wrote it in Bengali, but it was clearly meant for the Bengali people who had been educated in the British way, because they'd also learned. It's not like in modern English education in India that someone learns in Tamil Nadu, someone goes to an English medium school and they speak Tamil, but they can't read it or write it. It wasn't like that. They'd also, if they learned English, they'd also learn Bengali. And well, because in those days, education meant to learn well. Nowadays, because there's mass education, then everyone has to get educated. So the standard has come down. But in those days, it was not many people were educated. Not everyone was educated. And to be educated in those days meant to be, it means to be on a much higher level of education than the average educated person today. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was confident that if Western people, if they could just be exposed to these teachings, that they would accept it. And on the Wikipedia website of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it states that about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that if people are just exposed to these teachings, they will accept it. But I don't accept that. That's someone's opinion. They've put that. He didn't just say, look, here are the teachings, take, just have a look. but he was very forceful in his presentation. He wasn't just saying, yeah, you just take a look and take it or leave it and have a look and you'll automatically be your automatic. That seems to be the feeling in our ISKCON today, that, well, we just speak it and then people, they'll accept it. But it's not like that. Preaching means Prem Pracharan Apashanda Dalam. It means propagating pure love of Krishna and subduing the atheists, the infidels, the non-Vaishnava, Pashanda. Pashanda means those who don't accept the Vedic teaching. So that has to be fought with. The whole history of Vedic culture is one of fighting with wrong philosophy. All the different philosophies are fighting for supremacy. That's Vedic culture at the highest level, the philosophical level. And even Buddhism, although they say ahimsa paramo dharma, non-violence is the highest religion, but they necessarily... because the Buddha gave a mandate to propagate Buddhism. Buddhism is not a passive religion. It's a missionary religion. So they had to get into fights also, philosophical fights. And then they philosophically fought among themselves also, because the Buddha didn't give much philosophy. So they had to fill it in later, as with Christianity and Islam. There were some few basic teachings and the philosophy got filled in later, which is very different to the Vedic model, which is the philosophy, it all comes as a package. Later there may be different perspectives on what that package is, but it comes. It's not that there's just some vague beliefs and then later on it all gets filled in later. Christianity, what is Christianity? What is considered Christianity today? Most of the basic teachings weren't given by Jesus at all. The Trinity and that Jesus, the essence of Christianity is that Jesus died to deliver us from our sins. Jesus didn't teach that. And this thing about the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, he didn't teach that. There's so many things. The church, Jesus didn't found any churches, and so on and so on and so on. It was all filled in later. Anyway, I'm digressing. Necessarily we digress, because when you enter the ocean, where do you go? There's so much. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he... was a towering figure. In so many ways, very, very powerful in presenting Krishna consciousness. Forceful, very forceful in his presentation. We think of Srila Prabhupada, he spread Krishna consciousness. He was forceful in his presentation also, but if we see his disciples' Vyasa Puja offerings to him, we'll see that Srila Prabhupada, to a large extent, captured their hearts by his charm. The personality of Srila Prabhupada, a very charming personality, but he was very heavy also, but in many ways, but... very different personality to that of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. One thing they had in common, of course, so many things they have in common, but as founders of movements, they both started alone with no help and just a vision. And they started something completely new. Now you may think, well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati didn't speak something new. He was speaking Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message in Bengal, where everyone knew of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and there's already so many Vaishnavas. But Prabhupada came to a place where there were no Vaishnavas. No one heard the term Vaishnava, and just a few professors in the university and maybe a few hippies who had wandered off to India had heard of Krishna. No one knew what kirtan was. Even the professors in the university who knew the name of Krishna, kirtan wasn't known. Even to them. Allen Ginsberg knew. He was not a hippie, a beatnik. The precursors to the hippies. He was a beat poet. So he knew what was kirtan. But it was, Prabhupada really brought something very different and very new. And so did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Inasmuch as he presented Krishna consciousness in a manner which was completely new to the people of Bengal. They weren't used to this, to such a presentation. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had also preached, written so many books. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his forcefulness, in his keen... Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also did that, very analytical in his approach, as I just mentioned, this Chaitanya Shikshamrita, very analytical in his approach. In other works also, just like Bhakti Tattva Vivek. Vivek means it's analytical. He did this Vivek was the Mayavadis had taken it as their property. Vivekananda. That Mayavadi, this Drigdrisha Vivek was the name of a Mayavadi work. And just by analyzing, you come to the conclusion that I'm God. They don't say that, but they say, I am the eternal, ineffable, unlimited self beyond matter. So anyway, you just have to slip in the term God there. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he made Bhakti Tattva Vivek, that Vivek should not bring us to an impersonal conclusion, but to the should bring us to bhakti. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Actually, to discuss Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we should first discuss at length Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the manifestation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was non-different. Guru is one. He was non-different. He everything he taught was derived from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But he combined with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's keen insights on bhakti tattva, the forcefulness of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj in dismissing everything that is rupanuga viruddha, that which is opposed to the teachings of the followers of Rupa Goswami. So this was something new. The highly intellectual approach was not exactly new. He wasn't the only one. That was the standard way. Anyone who was writing on bhakti in those days in Bengal, they would write in a highly stylistic, literary, Sanskritized manner. That's the way people write. That was how you, if you write in the vernacular, any vernacular language, then if you're writing on philosophical or religious topics, well, especially philosophical topics, then it should be highly Sanskrit. That's just the way it is. That was the tradition, and it was practically required. If we're going to discuss Vedic philosophy, we have to discuss it in the terms of Vedic philosophy, which is Sanskritized and quite complex. Bhaktivinod Thakur, actually, he was maybe the first to write in a more simplified manner, following the example of the Bengali novelists who parodying the British novelists. They wrote in relatively simple language and in prose, as opposed to composing shlokas. Well, not all Sanskrit or other writing was in prose. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, very analytical and showing how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings are the highest and how Krishna consciousness as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has presented it, this is the highest. It is not something to be ashamed of. In 1863, I think it was, there was the Maharaj libel case in which a Bombay newspaper publisher and editor had brought so many accusations against the head of the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya that he's misusing his role. He's using the wives and daughters of his disciples in an improper way. And he wrote very strong articles against him, which became very controversial because the followers of the Maharaj, they weren't very happy at this. They said, Guru is just like Krishna. That was the understanding. So it's a long story, but one of the two British judges who judged the case, it became a judgment on Hinduism in general and the principle of Guru and Krishna. He said that one of the judges said the whole root of this is of this this foul degradedness, I'm paraphrasing here, is Krishna. Because Krishna, in their estimation, was licentious. Therefore, the whole institution of the Vallabh Sampradaya and Vaishnavism in general is, it's all degraded because they worship this person and then they themselves become fallen like that. Bhaktivinod Thakur himself was under that impression, having been raised with British education. But then he discovered Chaitanya Bhagavat and then his mind changed. And he understood what actually the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the effect of this Maharaj libel, well, not just that, but that was a major factor in Hindus thinking, well, maybe we got it wrong some ways, in many ways. The British are more virtuous and noble and ethical and moral, and maybe we should clean up our Hinduism a bit and allow widow remarriage and stop child marriage and stop sati and stop Vaishnavism because it's so degraded. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, by his teaching, he wanted to establish that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings are the highest as they stand. By worshipping Nagara Raj, Krishna, the king of enjoyers, That is the highest level of all morality, religion, ethics, morals, virtue, nobility. This he wanted to establish. So this was something new. And he started off alone. And even the Bhaktivinoda Thakur had been making these points, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gradually disassociated himself from the followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur for various reasons. One reason, they weren't as dynamic as himself. And he thought that they couldn't help him because they're mostly householders, they don't have the time or the inclination for what's needed. Okay, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave the teachings. Now we have to propagate that very strongly. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't write many original works as Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. His original works were one which he's wrote in the presence of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, on the order of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the comparison of the positions of a Brahmana and a Vaishnava. And later that was expanded. And he wrote many essays on taking some particular issue and examining that in essays. And he wrote extensive commentaries on Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, and Srimad Bhagavatam, he commented on some parts of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he wanted to write many more things, but he was busy in active preaching, traveling here and there, but he spent a lot of time writing also. But his idea was to expand the teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to bring these to the world. The books are there. Let us propagate the teachings therein. But the followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they were mostly older, and they weren't inclined to take up the mission in a powerful manner that he was. Generally, in sadhus in general, and Gauriya Vaishnavas in particular, they were expected to be very mild. But there are many complimentary adjectives, not really complimentary, but adjectives which describe Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which attest to his being a saintly person. Mild is not one of them. If we say someone is a mild person, we usually say that in an approving manner. He's a mild nature. If we want to say it in a non-approving way, we'd say something like, he's a wimp. Means a coward. Mild means that they don't like to upset others. They interact with others in a manner that they take care not to step on their toes, as the English saying goes. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was not mild. He was intense in preaching Krishna consciousness. So he wanted to show that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, they are the highest, but they are seriously misrepresented by persons who call themselves followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wanted to present himself. Yes, we are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Oh, you're one of those? No, we're not one of those. Those are not followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're chanting Hare Krishna. They're singing, they're crying, they're not followers. They are misrepresenting. So this was something new and unprecedented. How could he be so strong and a Vaishnava Parad? He's going against. He's blaspheming the leaders of Vaishnava society, recognized people. Who for generations their families have been recognized as the leaders of Vaishnava society, and Saraswati Thakur is blaspheming them. But he was very strong. He not only the supposed Vaishnavas, but anyone, which means everyone, who was not in line with his teachings. he pointed out what is the defect. So this was sadhu, this was unprecedented, it was something new. Sadhus, why should they speak like this? But that was necessary. Generally sadhus, they're expected to exemplify ahimsa, non-violence. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, describing the qualities of Vaishnavas, prani matre udbegna debo, not to give trouble or disturbance to any living being. So people think that, well, all right, that sadhu should be very gentle, not disturb anyone. Certainly shouldn't call them a fool, a rascal, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur regularly did. They thought they were shocked. This is very low class, they thought. But he not only called people fools and rascals, but he showed how they are fools and rascals, and he showed how they should stop being fools and rascals, and show them how they could come out of that condition. Now you may say, well, that's hingsa. That's to be nasty like that is hingsa. That's violence. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he defined ahingsa as not preaching Krishna consciousness. That is actually envy of others. Seems as a very strange definition. Surely to not be violent to others is just to be, just don't cause them any harm and just present Krishna consciousness, and then they can take it or leave it. And they'll take it because that's the idea. People will take it because Krishna consciousness is so good and so nice, they'll automatically take it. That's the idea. But he said not to preach Krishna consciousness, that is ahimsa. Sorry, that is hingsa. And ahimsa is to preach Krishna consciousness, even to preach it very strongly. I mean, so well, how is that? If you call someone a fool and a rascal, surely that's disturbing them. Well, the example may be given, someone is about to have an operation, and so you stick a needle in them and give them an anesthetic, which anesthetizes them, knocks them out, makes them unconscious. So to inject them with a needle is certainly painful. So you may say, well, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't give them any pain. All right, we won't inject them. We'll do the operation without anesthesia. Then you're cutting up the body. It used to be that surgery was done without anesthesia. And many people thought better to die. You know, they'd have to tie people down to do surgery. Even a simple surgery, not even surgery, some procedure is lancing an abscess. I've had it done without anesthesia. And it hurts. It hurts. It really hurts a lot. And I've had it done with just inadequate anesthesia, dry ice. So that also hurt a lot. So this giving trouble to others by calling them a fool a rascal, that is meant to wake them up so that they can be saved from much worse trouble. If we say, well, let's just be nice to people, don't say they're stupid. Yesterday, someone took exception when I pointed out that most people in the world are stupid. He didn't like that term. So he may think, well, we should be polite and nice, but on some occasions, politeness and niceness is to make that the principle rather than acting for people's benefit. That is another kind of foolishness and rascaldom and violence. The house is burning. All the rooms of the house are on fire except the one that we're sitting in, and that's air-conditioned, and we're sitting and peacefully drinking coffee. And I happen to know that the rest of, so I come in and very politely say, excuse me, I don't want to disturb you, but you're drinking coffee, but actually the rest of the house is on fire, and it's probably going to collapse very soon, so would you mind if you just left your coffee and got out of the house? And in the meantime, the house does collapse on you and everyone gets killed. You have to run in and leave your coffee, get out of here immediately, as the house on fire. What are you talking about? It's all peaceful and it's cool and air conditioned. I don't think there's any fire. Get out of here. Don't disturb. Why are you disturbing us? We're drinking our coffee peacefully. It's our coffee break. You're just trying to get us back to work. You're cheating us. So there are, in certain circumstances, strong words are required, and circumstances means the whole world is going to hell. People are wasting their human form of life. They require to be woken up. If you can tell them, my dear sir, everything you're doing is nonsense, give it up. If it's effective, all right, very good. That is the preaching system of this. You can look up that verse. This Dante Nidhaya Chunakam. Yeah, what is it? I never learned it. Dante. What is it? Dante Nidhaya Chunakam. Padaya Nipatya. Yeah. Chaitanya Chandra Charane Kuruta Anuraga. Hey Sadhava Sakala Vihaya. Something like that. I'm holding a straw in my teeth. Very humbly, I'm approaching you and saying, hey Sadhava, you're a very noble, righteous person. Falling at your feet, I'm saying, just give up all this nonsense. Give up all your nonsense ideas and become attached to the lotus feet of Chaitanya Chandra. So, well, that's one method. But if it doesn't work, instead of calling him Hey Sadhava, you could call him something else like Hey Vimurha. As Krishna does in Bhagavad Gita, repeatedly, Vimurha nanu pashyanti, pashyanti gyanu chakshus. A great fool is one who doesn't, according to Krishna, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, is one who does not see how the living being acquires different situations under the modes of nature and enjoys and suffers thereby. So, this is required. Saraswati Thakur was aware that this is required. So, yeah, it's not completely out of, he also said that if cultured people of the West are presented with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then they'll gradually accept it. He told them, don't try and force it on them. But he wanted to, at the same time, although he was strong, his method was not simply to call names, but to convince people. But even to convince people, you have to be very strong, because people's minds wander all over the place, as we all have experienced when we're trying to speak to people about Krishna consciousness, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and they'll change the subject here and there. They won't get the point. How many times have we heard Prabhupada speaking with someone and they just don't get the simple point? Prabhupada's trying to explain to them, or he is explaining, but they're not getting it. The simple point that the soul is different to the body. How many times? Prabhupada patiently, again and again and again, and they just don't get it. Because they're stupid. So it might, if you hear Srila Prabhupada, then the person speaking, he's trying to make a point. Prabhupada just cut him out. He won't let him finish the sentence. And bring him back to the point again and again and again. Just hammering in the point. Just try to understand this. First of all, understand this point. We're not the body. We're eternal spirit soul. Whatever the point that Prabhupada was making. So that is required, some force. Otherwise, if it's just some, well, my idea is this, and oh, well, oh, okay, that's very interesting. Well, the Hindus think that, and yeah, well, all right. And I'm just listening to some philosophy course given by a professor in America, recorded lectures, and he said that, well, philosophy began with the Greeks. And he said, of course, we know that prior to that there were Buddhists and others, but real philosophy began with the Greeks. I'm trying, and listening to the lecture, I'm just trying to understand. What he means is, well, he actually said that previously there was some body of some works which you're supposed to explain, that philosophy, what was considered philosophy, means to explain some already given work which is a priori considered to be infallible, which the Vedic knowledge is there, and the Buddhists have the, what is it called, Tripitaka, supposed to be the sayings of the Buddha, and then you work around that. But it's, and he thinks that, well, philosophy means where you start off with cognito ergo sum, that I think, therefore, I'm conscious, I'm cognizant, therefore I exist. You start off with, it's just applying human intelligence, that's all. Out in the ocean of perceptions and experiences and thoughts, and you try and put it all together with your own intelligence, and that, in his idea, is philosophy. So you can say that Western philosophy began like that. But then from the Vedic perspective, that's not philosophy either. That's just mental speculation. It has no basis. And it can never, you can, after studying philosophy all your life, if you study in the Western system, probably if you're honest, you could say that you didn't advance anywhere. You don't actually know anything any more than when you study. Of course, you could say, well, this is what Hume taught, this is what Kant said, but in terms of actually knowing anything with any certainty, you can't say with any certainty anything. And even cognito ergo sum, that everything's up to be challenged. So he gave this philosophical understanding forcefully, because this liberal ethic, which, oh, it's a long history. The Enlightenment, Enlightenment people means people began to understand that what the church is teaching is largely a bunch of rubbish. And then that was their Enlightenment. Okay, that's one kind of Enlightenment. Took them over 1,000 years to understand it, which means they were pretty stupid prior to that. Dark ages. They became enlightened, but then they just increased their ignorance in another way. That's all. So they're still in the dark. They still don't know anything of any real import. Of course, they understood how to make big fireworks, which they shoot off into space, for instance. But as to the actual nature of being, they don't have a clue. They don't even ask the right questions. Like I was saying, you're all more intelligent than Einstein, because Einstein, he was very intelligent in the wrong matter, applying his intelligence to matters of ultimately not very great importance. The real matter of importance is, who am I? I'm in this world. Where am I going? Where have I come from? And what's it? Why am I suffering? I'm controlled. What is the controlling force? These are... Oh, it's almost 9:30. I didn't even start the lecture yet. There's no end. We're going round and round in the ocean. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he wanted to establish this and very, very powerfully and strongly and forcefully. But his force was, it wasn't name calling, but showing that his powers of intellect exceeded those of the Western man, who thought that, yeah, we're very intelligent, we're very learned, and these Indians, they don't know anything. He would meet them and he would leave them flabbergasted. Now, when we hear about Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, his extraordinary intellect. Of course, it wasn't only by intellect that people came and joined him. But it was largely, yeah, there's philosophical conviction that this is actually Vaishnavism. This is actually, for those who are from a Vaishnava background, this is actually Vaishnavism. This is actually the ultimate goal of life. Yeah, very intellectual approach. Kirtan was widespread in Bengal, and certainly the Gauriya Mat did a lot of kirtan, but he's not famous for singing kirtan. He's famous for speaking kirtan. without understanding which the singing kirtan, it won't help us very much actually. Because Siddhanta Alashjan Anartata Charena, as he stated, one who is lazy in understanding the Siddhanta, he doesn't give up anartas, he doesn't go beyond anartas. Then he's on the stage of Bahujan Makare Jadi Shravan Kirtan Toputan Napai Krishna Pade Premadham. Then he's on the platform of many, many births of apparent hearing and chanting about Krishna, but actually not going anywhere. So when we hear about him, his powerful presentation, his erudition, we may think that, well, Prabhupada, he wasn't so scholarly. He wasn't so powerful. But we shouldn't think that Prabhupada was any less. And we shouldn't think that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was any less, because he didn't spread Krishna consciousness all over the world in the same way that Prabhupada did. They're both on the same level. Now there's some devotees who are propagating some association of world Vaishnavas, and they promote Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and they show all the different followers, and they present Prabhupada as one of them. There's Prabhupada, and then there are all the different god brothers. Prabhupada is just one among many. But that's also not very proper. Of course, if someone has come to Krishna consciousness via the Gauriya Mat, then naturally they'll have a great regard for their guru and for their guru's guru. But they should all recognize our own Srila Prabhupada's position, that that he brought the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the Western world, and the Gauriya Mat was in a moribund condition. That means, well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. Moribund, you know that word? I thought you might know it as a doctor. It means, morbid means dead, and moribund means on the way to being dead. Almost, death-like. Yeah, well, when we all came to Mayapur, I first came in 1976, it was empty, practically. The ISKCON Mayapur was, that new building had just been, that was, it's difficult to say now because it became merged with other buildings, but ISKCON Mayapur was mostly an open field, and there was Chaitanya Mart was there, Shiva Sangan, Advaita Bhavan, and the Jogpit. They had all been established by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And on the other side of the ISKCON property, going towards the Ghat, Hular Ghat or Ishodhyan, was Madhav Maharaj's Mart and Goswami Maharaj's Mart. And that's all. There's nothing else. There was no development over all these years. So they weren't expanding. But after Prabhupada expanded Krishna consciousness all over the world, now Mayapur has become full. There are countless mats, and there are probably two or three or more under construction right now. There are always new ones being built. So to say that Prabhupada, to say, well, to try and put him in the category, well, he was one among others, or one of the best ones, it's not very proper. They should recognize Srila Prabhupada's special position. And not try... of course they give credit to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We're not denying that. But we shouldn't fail to also recognize that Srila Prabhupada actually did what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had started. And of course Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did what Bhaktivinoda Thakur had started. So it's all a continuum in this way. And of course others were preaching also. We're not saying that others weren't preaching, but still there's a difference in quantity that has to be seen. I'll just say one more thing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it's highly controversial even today and will continue to be, and there are more analysis is needed, more writing is needed, inasmuch as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur changed the direction of the sampradaya, inasmuch as previous acharyas had always emphasized prema prapti. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said, that the goal of life is to, and the goal of our sadhana is to attain Krishna prema. And that's definite. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said this prema prayojan, prema pomarto mahan. I'm just not remembering now. Krishna Vishayak Prem Param Purusharta Jara Age Trina Tula Chari Purusharta. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Prem, love, in relationship to Krishna, is the highest objective of human life, in comparison to which the four objectives, which are generally considered objectives throughout the Vedic literature, namely dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, they're just like insignificant as a piece of grass. And there are many such statements that Rupa Goswami, ādo śrādhā tathā sadhu saṅgha, and then gradually, tathā prema abhyudanchati. Prema is the goal. So they all emphasize that practice of Krishna consciousness is for the aim of attaining prema. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't deny that, but he brought in Drigdrishya Vita, that we're not trying to see Krishna so much as we are trying to be seen by Krishna. And he emphasized very much seva vritti, or the service attitude by which Krishna will be pleased to accept us. So in that sense, he changed the emphasis. It's a very big topic, and it affects the whole way that we are practicing Krishna consciousness, the whole way that Srila Prabhupada preached Krishna consciousness. It's not in exactly the same way as acharyas, especially prior to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and prior to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, we could say that in his writings he emphasized this prema prapti, attaining prema. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also, he didn't deny that. He also stated that, but he put the emphasis that take up the attitude of service, and from that everything else will come. Because that is, and the two are not different. To have the attitude of surrendered service, that is non-different from prema. Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he gives the, we could call that the Mool Sutra, what is that? Just like Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, what's that called? Not Mahavakya, it's called the Paribhasha Sutra. Definitive, Paribhasha means definition, and Sutra means terse statement. So it's not exactly a terse statement. It's one shlok. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kamadhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktirutama. So selfless service to Krishna. Not just selfless service. If we promote selfless service without Krishna, it's mundane. If we say, let us selflessly serve the poor, the sick, that is mundane. Or if we say Krishna, service to Krishna without selflessness, without emphasizing selflessness, that's also mundane or mixed. That's called mixed. Mishra bhakti, karma mishra, jnana mishra. So, anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kama, without any mixture. This is what Rupa Goswami taught. Devotional service to Krishna without any mixture of personal desire. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out how what is going on in the name of bhakti, even the people who are doing it are talking about prema prapti, but intertwined with their attitude, even they may not be aware of it, are illicit desires. And on the other hand, all noble activities, such as opening hospitals and schools, without Krishna, without clearly making Krishna the goal of life, that's also useless. That's why he said he made many earth-shattering statements, such as the neophyte ringing the bell in the temple during the arati of the Lord, even once, is more beneficial to human society, more beneficial both materially and spiritually, not just spiritually, materially also, than the mundane persons opening millions of hospitals and schools. You may say, well, spiritually, well, maybe. But materially, So many things. Vrindavan is just for shallow people. Those who really want to serve, they should go to Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra is where Bhagavad Gita was spoken. That's just preliminary. That goes up to the standard of moksha. Moksha yeshami ma shuchaha. And when Krishna Prem is in Vrindavan, he said that only shallow people, they're interested in Vrindavan. Very strange statement. He went on to explain it. The Kurukshetra is also the place of, yeah, and this we can show that Prem Prapti, he's already Prem Prapta. He's clearly on that platform. He's already there. Kurukshetra is also described in Srimad Bhagavatam as the place where the Vrajavasis went to meet Krishna, who came from Dwaraka on the occasion of a solar eclipse. So the Saraswati Thakur explained that the feelings of the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, and especially of the topmost gopi, whose name is not mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam directly, the feelings there that she got Krishna, but not quite. So in that situation, the need of because our aim is service, and the need of service is most intense in that situation, therefore Kurukshetra is the best place to serve. Not mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. So that this Krishna meeting the gopis in Kurukshetra, that is the whole crux of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, as are revealed in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, like this, he made many such statements, which were, anyway, a few of them are given in that Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. So who's going to write the book on Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Who will do that? Anyone? Someone will do in course of time. And Bhaktivinoda, Gorky Shah Das Babaji, we also have to see. It's not that Gorky Shah, he just initiated, that's all he did. He just initiated Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. No, he was very influential in his life, everything. Okay, Hare Krishna. Any questions? I'll indulge in a cough. That is my observation, that he shifted the emphasis from by our sadhana, by our bhajan, our kirtan, we want to attain prem. But he rather instructed serve selflessly, particularly the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, preaching. Now is the time for priti vite ache jato nagaradigram sarvata prachar hoibe morana. Now is the time for preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world. So serve the mission. Become selfless in service. Yeah. Why exactly requires study, introspection, and mercy coming from above to understand all these points. I haven't done a deep study of that. For that we should also study more of the exoteric matters, the whole situation in the world like this. But acharyas, they come to give the message of the spiritual world, but they, as I mentioned in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, in the introductory section, but they also do so in response to the situation in the world that they are ministering to. Just like, for instance, as Gokulchandra told me several times, that from reading Madhvacharya's works, he spoke a lot against Lakshmi Puja. So it seems at that time there was some kind of Lakshmi Puja going on, which was not proper. Madhvacharya, he was very, he strongly opposed that in his writings. So nowadays, no one's opposing that. Even the Madhva Sampradaya people, I've never heard of any of them opposing it, because it's not an issue nowadays. So he certainly addressed, he presented Krishna consciousness as he saw the need of the hour, addressing people have various, as he said, that's quoted in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava Sada, people have various misconceptions, and it requires elaborate discussion to clear up these discussions. He said, therefore I talk on hour after hour. I go on talking. As another feature of him, he gave long lectures. You think this is a long lecture? How is it? It's less than 2 hours. But that's for him, that was his shortest. It was 2 hours. Generally we hear of, he would speak longer. It appears that previously there may have been more qualified people. It appears like that. That's my hunch. There is stated somewhere that Advaita Acharya, his successors for 13 generations, they'd be in Krishna consciousness, his descendants, which comes out to around now or a little earlier than that. Some statement, I was told that. That would, again, it requires a lot of research and reflection and mercy to understand all these things. But a shift is there, that is undeniable, and some blame him for that. It is our duty to uphold him. Definitely it's no small topic. Parampara jano bhalo mate. We should know very well what is parampara. Of the 13 children of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one other among the males, among the sons, took up Krishna consciousness as the central focus of his life, Lalita Prasad. So he was opposed superficially. Srila Prabhupada said, superficially he was opposed to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said, anyway, that's another big topic. Mm-hmm. Hare Krishna. So we're supposed to begin the program again at 10 o'clock. That's just 10 minutes from now. Is it 10 o'clock, it was said? 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, kirtan. What time was given? 11 o'clock? Does anyone know? Okay, well, I guess we can just go through. There's no real point. If 10 o'clock bhajan, do we have the printouts now? Okay, so print them. All right, we can have a little break if you want. All right then, so say in 15 minutes we can regroup here. Where are all the devotees? I guess they're right. They have pressing daily services. In construction, for instance. Cooking. Oh, book distribution, yeah. That's a good way to celebrate Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur's disappearance day.